Welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. When we started 2025, I think we talked a little bit in our year in review slash heading into 2025 episode. I set like a lot of individual goals, both related to writing and not writing, and I kind of just did like a recent personal check-in being almost halfway through the year, making good progress on a lot of those.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
So, yeah, super excited about that.
Nice.
We got Nicole in the chat, so that's good to see as always. We have a fun episode today. We're going to talk about a lot of AI-related topics today. And as we're kind of putting this one together in the doc, I realized there was so much that we could discuss when it comes to AI. So this is actually going to be a bit of a two-parter. So we have two AI episodes. So this is going to be the first one. And then next episode, we're going to take a bit of a break with one of our first mini episodes, doing like a fun little themed sort of half-length episode like we discussed in our previous episode. And then we'll circle back to AI again. So yeah, there's just so much to discuss when it comes to AI, and I wanted to kind of get it all out there, like all of our thoughts on all of the different topics and uses, so that we wouldn't have to do another AI episode hopefully anytime soon after those two. So super excited to hear your thoughts on some of these today. But as always, before we get into all of the topics for the week, we do our reading recap. So have you been reading anything lately? I know you were reading a pretty interesting book last time we checked in.
Yeah, I'm still on the same one. I have taken a pause on reading. It's been the end of May was pretty busy for me, and then the beginning of this month has been a little rocky mental health wise. So yeah. I've kind of just been like taking a step back a little bit, but I'm still on the Shadow of the Gods book. And it's something I keep thinking about. Like, I'm excited to dive back in, but haven't made much progress in that regard. So hoping June is looking open for me, which is nice. I finally have like a month where there's nothing really going on. So my best friend just got engaged today. So that's
gonna congratulations.
Thanks. I was thrilled. Unexpected. I like screamed and dropped my phone when she FaceTimed me. But so I'm sure the rest of this year we'll be busy with like helping plan and being hopefully a bridesmaid.
Oh, yeah.
Considering best friend status. But so that'll be fun. But yeah, gotta fit it all in. Anyway.
Very cool.
You said I see on this thing that you DNF'd.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with the DNF because I've been reading three books if you count that. As I said before in our last episode, I'm still on The Devils by Abercrombie. Mm-hmm. So just kind of taking my time with that one. Still loving all of it. It's still everything I want from an Abercrombie book, just a lot faster paced than I'm used to from him. That pretty much still holds true about halfway through. So nothing really new to add there, just I'm still reading the book and enjoying it. And then the DNF came from trying out like a new fantasy subgenre that I have discovered I'm not a fan of. And I think it's just because it's not for me. Like all credit to the book. It has like 4,000 positive reviews on Amazon. So I think it's a me thing. But you've heard of lit RPGs, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Like vaguely, like maybe in passing. I don't know much about
it. That was kind of how I was too. So I was like, well, I'm going to give it a try because there's some big ones out there. I think Dungeon Crawler Carl is one of them. There's a few others. I just tried one of like the best reviewed ones. I honestly just was like, I like this cover, so I'll go with this one. As someone who likes books and likes games, I thought combining the two would be like right up my alley, but it wasn't even like the game mechanics being in the book that threw me off. It was more just the setup for the world and like just the protagonist. So it very well could be that I just need to try another one, which I'm not opposed to. I think the things I didn't like are going to be kind of genre staples, though, if I'm understanding how the genre works correctly. So I'm not 100% sure how I'd feel like going into another one. Like, it might just be one of those things that's not for me, is how I kind of interpreted how my my dislike of the book. Like, it wasn't really poorly written or anything. Like, it came across as well edited and everything like that. I just think not my taste.
Hey, and sometimes at least you tried a new thing, and maybe you can revisit with another author or something and see if that's more your speed. But yeah, sometimes you're just like, nope, this is just definitely 100% not for me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then I do have one other book I'm reading, because I've been trying to write more short stories just kind of while I work on the outline of mm-hmm. A Knight of Knives for Act 2. So mm-hmm. I actually have had the Dream Songs volumes 1 and 2 by Martin on my shelf for quite a while. And so if anyone out there isn't familiar with it, it's kind of like a mix between a biography of George R. R. Martin and a collection of his short stories, like during different periods of his life. So
it's actually, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really cool look at like the history of publishing and Martin's history as an author. And there's a lot of really cool stories in there. So I've just, obviously as a Martin fan, I've been loving that as well. Yeah. It's really good. So
very cool. I'll have to add that to my very long, long TBR.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to work through the physical books on my shelf. I'm kind of like going left to right now.
Yeah, that was my goal this year, is like to not buy. I bought one new book from V.E. Schwab, which came out this week, and because I love her, and I'm like, I'll always want one of her books. So yeah, but otherwise, I'm like, nope. As long as it's not like, I mean, sometimes book club stuff I have to get because it's not on my shelf. But yeah, I'm like, only my TBR, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was the same way, and with like the asterisk for like two authors.
Exactly.
If Winds of Winter was to come out, then obviously, and then The Devils. So that was pretty much where I was at with that. Were you going to ask something about the reading before we moved on?
I was not. Before we moved on, I think your audio is coming through your gamer mic, because I can hear your, like when you breathe out, it's got that like sound.
Oh, yeah. You're actually totally right.
Okay. I was like, this still sounds different. I don't know what it is.
That is so weird. Let me see how I can.
It's okay if it's not fixable. It's totally fine. I just was like, oh, wait, actually, I think now that I'm thinking about it, it might be his gaming headphones.
Yeah. Wait, let's see here.
Dang, girl, no thanks. But that's impressive.
All right, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to stop the Riverside and just switch, because it won't let me switch it mid-recording, but I'll just combine the two in post. Oh. That is nice. Okay, right. So yeah, following up on Nicole's 40 hours in a car. My God, Nicole.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That is a long time.
Hopefully not like 40 hours straight. That would be crazy. Hopefully there was a break. That would be rough.
The most I've done is like 24 straight, and I wasn't the one driving, so.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Nicole asks, how's settling into the new place? It's going great. No complaints. Just
good.
It took about a couple weeks to, you know, get everything out of the boxes and get the furniture all sorted in the right spots, but we're going good over here. Definitely much better than the last place. So
nice.
Can't complain.
Step up.
Yeah. Georgia to New Mexico. Yeah, that's a long drive.
That is a long drive. Yeah. Wow.
All right. Well, I don't think we have any podcast updates, just what I said about our next episode being sort of a half-length mini episode. For those, we have some fun, kind of more laid-back themes that we're going to do. So curious to see what you guys think of the first one we have, and then we'll circle back to the AI. But yeah, that's going to do it for our intro section. So Ash, cool. We can just dive right into the AI focused topics for the week. I'm really curious to see what some of the audience has to say about some of these as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully we get some answers there. So I'll kick us off by starting with, I think, an important distinction with AI. I think often we just kind of lump it all under one term, at least recently. It seems like when people talk about AI, they don't really make a distinction between the more generative AI like ChatGPT and image generators, which I think is more often than not what they're referring to when they're being like hypercritical of something related to AI. And then there's like the more assistive tools, so things like that we've talked about, like Grammarly or something like Pro Writing Aid.
the things that are, you know, not necessarily doing the writing for you, but more so helping you with grammar rules, or they're analyzing your writing. And like with something like Pro Writing Aid, it's like you're using active voice here as opposed to passive or something like that. So I think that distinction is really important to make when we're talking about AI. I know it's kind of a pain to make that distinction sometimes, where you have to say generative AI. It's kind of a mouthful, but I do think
Gen AI.
Yeah, Gen AI is a good way to shorten it. But I think it's important to make that distinction when we're talking about like the pros and the cons and what we like and dislike about it in the industry. Mm-hmm. So I guess with that said, we'll start with generative AI. Mm-hmm. what do we think about generative AI tools being used in writing? So something like ChatGPT being used to write the actual prose of a book. I have a feeling I know where you stand on this, but given our news story of last week, but I'd love to hear your thoughts overall on something like this.
I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, but I hate it. I hate it in anything artistic or creative. That's pretty much as succinct as I can make it. I just don't like, but when it comes to, and we'll get into like the editing tools later, which I think is also a good divergence from the Gen AI stuff. It's actually, my partner and I were talking, we had a long talk about this on Sunday at dinner. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like very much, if the way that AI was create Gen AI, which is going to be hard for me, when I'm talking about AI, I'm mostly talking about Gen AI for this episode. So if I slip up, please know that it's just in that realm, not AI in general.
Yeah.
Totally. With Gen AI, a lot of the models have just been trained on pirated or stolen material. So if the process for most of our Gen AI tools like ChatGPT were trained, and the artists that these things are trained on are approving of and getting some, you know, like compensation for it, and that's, to me, that would have been, that is a much better route, right? Because at least what it's being created on is appropriate and the artists are getting their dues. But that's not the case, and we keep seeing these instances, especially with the Meta thing recently, of all of these pirated books, you know, being used to train the model. So I just ethically, I don't know if I can get behind it and say I support artists and then be also pro Gen AI. So that's kind of how I feel about it. And I have a feeling you also agree.
Yeah, I would say out of all of our AI topics, this is probably where I'm going to be like the most black and white on one of them. It's just, and not even getting into what you mentioned is extremely important, the like unethical training data and methods. But just from the standpoint that if you're using generative AI to create art, and I put that in quotes for those who aren't watching, I don't consider it, I don't know, like someone put it very well in, I think, a wording that's shared quite commonly now, where it says, if you couldn't be bothered to write the book, why should I be bothered to read it? So that's kind of where I stand with any Gen AI art, where it's like, I generated this image. Okay, well, you didn't put, I would care more if you put effort into drawing a picture that turned out badly, honestly, than putting something into an image prompt and then acting like you created it. And the same goes for writing as well. Like the art of writing is an art because of the work and the parts of yourself that you put into it and the process and all of that. And that's all gone when you just enter a prompt. So I just don't care if you're like, if you're using Gen AI, I just would lose all interest in whatever you're writing or creating from it.
It just not even
mentioning the ethical concerns that come after all of that.
Yeah, it just also like is lazy to me. I don't, it's like, why are you even doing this? Then go work for like a Gen AI company or be like a, and I think we'll probably expand upon this later, but I think so many people are anti-Gen AI, that brands who start to use Gen AI in their marketing stuff, or, you know, there will be like, I'll be on Discover on Instagram, like the Discover page or whatever it's called now, and mm-hmm. going through stuff, and I'll see something that's really cool and I'll click on it. And in the caption, it'll be like, you know, created with whatever. And the comments are just like reading the person to filth. And you're kind of like, yeah, I think the consensus amongst most people is the same as ours. And mm-hmm. it's just like, what are you writing for then? Or like creating yeah, art right. for, if not to just like the hours it takes for some of the best in the field to do what they do is like a lifetime almost. I mean, some people have been drawing since they were children. And so yeah. it's like, what, same with writing. You know, I've been writing my whole life. Mm-hmm. I might not be particularly good at it, but like I've been doing it. It's something I enjoy doing. And so it's like, why would I let a machine do what it's taken me a lifetime to have the guts to finally do and to practice doing and to whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think you made a great point during the news story about the author who was caught using AI in our last episode, mm-hmm. where you don't want to be a writer if you're using Gen AI to create your books. You want the fame that comes with being an author, but you don't mm-hmm. want the work. You don't want to put in the effort. You don't actually care about the art form or the process. And I think that's yeah. very evident in the final product, especially if you're using Gen AI. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I find myself caring a lot more about human created works that, you know, yeah. flaws and all. I don't like, it doesn't have to be perfect. I don't think AI gen work is perfect by any means, but even if yeah. it were, I would still prefer the work that was created by like a human hand, a human mm-hmm. touch. It just, that has more meaning and impact to me as yeah. as a reader and a creator. So yep. that's, like I said, probably the most black and white I'm going to be on this episode, but yeah, yeah. just like, I generally cannot think of a situation where someone would say, I created this with AI, and I would not lose all interest I had in reading or like viewing yeah. it. So yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that.
All right. Well, moving over to like the other category of AI mm-hmm. that we mentioned, assistive. So how do you feel yeah. more about these tools? So as I mentioned, some examples just off the top of my head, Pro Writing Aid, Grammarly, things that aren't creating the prose for you. They're more so either analyzing your writing and giving you pointers or finding mm-hmm. things that you may not have seen. But they're also not being trained, at least hopefully, from the ones that I've used, don't seem to be, from any mm-hmm. public information, be trained unethically. Now, could be wrong. Something could come out, but
yeah, for now, we're just going to operating on what we know.
Yeah, we're just going to lead with that assumption that these are ethically trained algorithms that are analyzing your writing and
yeah,
you know, kind of giving you either the grammar help or the more editorial pointers before maybe mm-hmm. you're sending it off to an agent or something.
Yeah, this one's a little bit more, it's less black and white, as you said. I have mm-hmm. Grammarly, and I went in and I Googled, which also Google's now like impossible to get away from AI, but mm-hmm. I Googled how to turn off all of the AI capabilities as much as possible to still yeah. maintain just like grammar, like spelling mostly. Mm-hmm. Scrivener has its own like analyzer, like built in. So when cool. Scrivener, I just like do word check or whatever, which is nice because it's not doing it as I'm going. And mm-hmm. I kind of like that because then I like don't, I'm not focusing on the mistakes that I'm making. I'm just,
yeah, it can be distracting.
Yeah, exactly. So I turned all of the AI functionalities off in Grammarly, which if you didn't know you could do that, you can, which I think is the most ethical route to go just in general. Just because you don't know, I don't know. For the editor, I've never used the pro writing component. My problem is with, even with Grammarly, I'm just going to stick with that because it's the one that I use the most. When mm-hmm. it does have the suggestions on, that's distracting enough for me to be like, is this a change that I should make as I'm writing? And then I'm like catching myself being like, stop it. It's just a program like grammatically telling you what to do. Mm-hmm. And I my only worry with that, if people rely very heavily on those like more detailed editor programs, is that you're going to be focusing on making sure it like sounds correct versus allowing your voice to come through. And then it's not creating anything from you, or for you. So I think that's a positive, but it is kind of, you're like self-correcting. And I think that's a slippery, or it can be for certain people to be like, oh, maybe I should change this because this program says I should. When it comes to formatting, that's a different beast also. But in the same vein, if you're self-publishing, hire an editor. And then we make the community pool healthier and, you know, better by supporting independent editors, independent formatters. I know Bex, like, she taught herself how to do all of it. And so many independent and self-published authors have taught themselves from the ground up. And I'm sure many do utilize these tools, but for people who like only utilize it, I'm like, there are people out there for hire that you could absolutely hire. So I don't know. Yeah. It's in that regard, I'm like, use it as little as you can, because I do understand like none of us have the time to like be full-fledged editors in our spare time while writing and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. What about you? How do you feel about that?
Yeah. I actually just, when it comes to like spell check and stuff, I just use what's built into my word processor. So I don't make much use of Grammarly or anything like that. I have used not Pro Writing Aid, but Autocrit, who has like a very clear mission statement that they don't use AI for, like they don't train any AI on your stuff unless you opt into it or anything like that. So, I've used it for like a couple short stories where mostly just for kind of broad feedback, like, am I repeating a word too many times, or is like active voice where it shouldn't be, or like something like that. Like you said, I think when you're using those kind of programs, you do have to be careful that you don't become too dependent on them, because you do have to maintain your author voice, and it is just a computer program that is just kind of giving you the best guess for editorial feedback. So go into it with like, you know, the ability to kind of like when someone's giving you feedback on your story, like you have to have the ability to parse through what feedback you're going to take and what feedback you're not. You kind of have to be able to do the same thing with these programs. But yeah, as far as like how I feel about them in general, I guess as long as it's, you know, ethically trained and it's not doing any of the writing for you, it doesn't really matter to me. I just think, like you said, it's important to not become entirely dependent on those things as well, like because you can very easily lose those skill sets if you're not constantly practicing them. And that kind of goes with the Gen AI thing as well, where I think we're going to touch on it a little bit later, where I think it really has a significant effect on your ability to like problem solve and think creatively.
I think that was like the next question on the list, and I think it's a good, if I'm looking at it right, I'm like, that's actually
actually that was the next one, so perfect segue. So I think I've noticed this a lot in like my work and like personal life, more so than in like writing spaces, because I think it's pretty commonly accepted in writing spaces that you shouldn't be using Gen AI. I think that's the mainstream way of thinking, and the people who disagree with that are very much the minority. But what I have noticed is that AI seems to affect people's ability to, like I said, think critically and problem solve on their own, at least from my perspective. Like, and it's difficult because when I, you know, I talk about using Gen AI in creative spaces, I care less about it in like a professional setting. For example, if you're using ChatGPT to help you write an email, I don't really care that much. What I care about is, will you still be able to write that email if ChatGPT servers go down? Like, how often are you relying on this? And are you slowly losing the ability to do that thing yourself and to think through that problem yourself? That's, I think, you know, a significant portion of society already struggles with critical thinking and other skills to the point where, you know, we're not, I don't think we need to worry about things like iPad kids anymore. It's AI kids. Like, there's programs to do thinking for you now. And I think that's a dangerous route. So, but yeah, have you noticed anything like that in your own life as well? Maybe outside of the writing space, that using AI some people become really dependent on it.
Yeah, so I actually do. I've got friends who use it almost exclusively for writing emails. And they just are like, their reasoning is it cuts down on time that I can be spent doing more important things. Mm-hmm. On one hand, I do understand this, especially because writing emails, especially for like a mass email chain, can be really tedious and nerve-wracking and all this kind of stuff. My counter to that is that your brain is, this is so silly. I don't know. Is it a muscle? Is your brain a muscle? Does it count as a, or is it its own thing?
I don't want to answer this because okay. I think I'm going to get whatever answer I give.
It's like a muscle. If it's a muscle, it's a muscle. If not, it's like a muscle, in which if you don't use it, you start to lose some definition and some ability. And I think when I was on my TikTok, like the craziest addiction ever, you know, I was starting to notice that like my attention span was like shot to shit. Yeah. And that, you know, I was having a hard time concentrating. I was having a hard time like not just reaching for my phone. So even just that. So imagine if you're constantly relying on like a ChatGPT to do grunt work or boring work. And I'm like, your brain still needs that. It still needs you're practicing these like soft-ish skills that, you know, if ChatGPT goes down or any of these other AI tools go down, or if something happens in the future, like what are you gonna do? I'm definitely like a more of a judgy person when it comes to this than I think like most people are. Like Nicole says, I use it when I'm feeling extra autistic at work and I don't know how to phrase stuff normal. I ask. It's like,
I think that's a legitimate like accessibility. That's a legitimate usage.
Tool. Yeah, as like accessibility tool for sure, but for like a non-neurodivergent person who's just like not wanting to write this email, I just don't know. My partner, it has health OCD. So he uses it when he's having like a really bad spiral to like ask it instead of going to WebMD, which is definitely way worse than anything, you know, and he needs an immediate reply. He uses it and it like is almost like a self-soothing thing. It like really helps him to compartmentalize and get through that moment. So I think it can be a good tool, especially when it's just like you're using it almost as a search engine. We won't even get into the cost of using it in terms of like resources. That's its own beast. Yeah. But in situations like that, I'm less inclined to like give anyone flack for that. It's the mundane stuff that I'm like, really? You want to just ask ChatGPT to do that for you? That's crazy. It's like recipes and shit like that. I'm like, I don't know. Just go on Pinterest or Google or something. I just worry of like the immediacy component in the same way our consumerism has happened of like, I need everything within 1 to 2 days or like instant. And, you know, I do research for a living and it can be really challenging and really hard. And it's not all supposed to be easy all the time. So anyway, in the day-to-day stuff, I don't use it if I can help it. It's like, I was like, for a second, I was like, maybe I'll use ChatGPT to like plan our trip because I think we're going to do the Pacific Northwest and just be like, what? And I was like, no, I can just get, it's tempting. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that it's not tempting in my day to day. It really, really is. Especially for like calorie counting stuff. I'm like working on getting fitter. And, you know, when you're at Chipotle and you don't know all the ingredient calorie counts or whatever, sometimes it's nice to like, ChatGPT, but then you're like, does it actually matter that much? Anyway, I'm rambling. I will ramble a lot this episode, but that's
good. That's what we're here for. Long form podcast.
right.
No, I totally agree. I think the examples that we kind of came up with from both your partner and Nicole are both like good examples of like what I would say is a legitimate use that's not, I don't think is necessarily going to have a negative impact on your ability to think and problem solve.
Right. It's like, this is beyond my ability.
I just, even in my own person, not recently because I've since like stopped using it for mundane things, but I did like when it was like the new thing, I was using it more than I would have liked to for certain things, just because of what you said, like the immediate gratification of it, where it's like, I get an instant solution to this problem and I don't have to think about it. Like it is very tempting. to go to it. So yeah, it's, and then I slowly noticed that in myself where I was like, I'm not solving these problems anymore in my own head. Like I need to get back to that because I'm going to become a very unintelligent person if I rely on this so much.
And to be fair, like, one, it takes a lot of brain power and science to create something like these AI tools. Like, my brother works in chip design, and it's bafflingly amazing. And just so props to the people, the brains that have come behind this and created technology like this. I think it can be an amazing thing. Like, certain hospitals are using it to, like, come up with a solution for really complex issues that they might not, you know, whatever. I think it can be like a really beneficial thing it's almost like, you know, what's that quote? It's like, whatever, it doesn't matter. But like in the right hands, it can be great and it can be helpful to humanity as a whole. But I don't know if we need it for our emails.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, is that it's a technology with really limitless potential.
Yeah.
And right. I think if we find the right applications for it, it could really be beneficial for everybody. But yeah, so the next topic I have for us is kind of going back to Gen AI a little bit, I think, but it's regarding AI disclosures. This is kind of relevant to that news story we covered the last episode where there was no AI disclosure. So how do you feel about AI disclosures being required? I know a lot of platforms like KDP and like social media platforms are trying to find the best way to require users to say, hey, this was made with AI. So specifically in like the publishing space and the book space, what are your thoughts on like what should have to check yes on that? And, you know, how detailed should those disclosures be? Things like that. How do you feel about it?
I am totally for disclosures. In the same way that you said earlier that, you know, if I find out that it's AI, I'm not going to read it kind of a situation. Mm-hmm. It puts the consumption choice in the consumer's hands. And if it wasn't such a bad thing in the creative space, then artists would have no problem doing that. But a lot of them do because they don't want people to know that they use AI. In terms of detail, I know that can get kind of muddy. Do I think that you need to disclose if you use Grammarly to word check? I don't know. I don't think so. Do you need to disclose if ChatGPT helped you edit to somebody else's wording like we saw recently in that story? Yeah. You know, at this point, we're going to start seeing most tools use AI without us even realizing that they're being used. So I don't know if like you're using a program, like I don't think Scrivener has AI, but if Scrivener suddenly like input an AI tool, you know, I would want to disclose that I used it for any creative component of it. Editing is one thing. Oh, here comes the dog. Leave me alone. I think to start, I would like to see like what Instagram has where it toggles on or off whether or not the thing is like AI influenced or worked. Now, a problem that my partner has is that sometimes when he edits, like he doesn't use AI when he edits his photos or his videos, but he does use editing software. And because it's edited, it'll like recognize that sometimes in Instagram and it'll like auto toggle on the AI. And
that's right. I remember you saying that.
Yeah. Like I didn't use AI in this. Like why? Just because it went through a program doesn't mean that it is. Mm-hmm. So that can be finicky too. But yeah, I think just like stating, I would like to just have like the disclosure say AI was used in partial construction of this thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just to start us off. But
yeah,
that's just my personal preference.
Yeah. I think, for me, it depends on the distinction, right? If it's generative AI being used to create any aspect of the work, I think just absolutely that needs to be said somewhere and somewhere clear, like not at the back of the book in fine print or something, like when the reader's done reading it. But somewhere where they can see it pretty clearly. But like you said, when you get into like the more assistive tools, it can be kind of muddy with how far do you take that? You know, and how granular do you get with it? Like if I'm using spell check in like Grammarly, do I need to disclose that? And I would say no, unless I would say as long as there's no AI creating written work for you, like so the more generative side of things, I personally wouldn't want to see it disclosed.
Yeah, I kind of
just because I think you can take that too far where it's like, well, did you write, you know, what tools did you use to write? Did you use Microsoft Word to write this? Like, Microsoft has Copilot. So like things like that, you know, as long as you're not using generative AI to actually create the story you're writing, I don't think you need to disclose those assistive tools.
Yeah.
At least not right now. Obviously that could change depending on how these tools evolve and things like that. But that's just kind of where I stand with it at the moment. And like I said, I think it needs to be 100% clear. If you did use Gen AI, like at the top of your Amazon description in the book subtitle somewhere,
where I'm going to see it right away. Center. Yeah. No. And even then it's just so hard. I'm like, if you say how much of the book is AI, if you're like, AI was used in the generation of this book cover. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fine. I like have feelings about that too, but like, okay. AI was used in partial creation of this novel. Well, how much? Like, how much is you and how much is that? And that's when it gets weird. Are you going to, like, have every paragraph that was used in, like, with or edit whatever? Are you going to, like, have, like, a little symbol? And even then, like, I don't want to read what a computer wrote. I'm not a I'm not a programmer. The tool thing, I get it. It can be assistive. Someone, I think I said this a couple weeks ago, like someone blocked me because I was like, well, Grammarly, like, you can turn it off and you like don't need to do it. And they were like, you're a fascist. And I was like, okay. fine, I guess I am, but I'm not, by the way. That was a joke.
Asterisk.
Asterisk. But yeah, I think it's a murky world out there for creatives. It's really, really hard. It's, you know, I don't know. And then if you're accused of it, how do you prove it wasn't? That's right, another thing too. Like, how do you?
We talked about the AI witch hunts a couple episodes back, and I think that's such a tricky situation, right? Because there are some scenarios where it's just like blatantly obvious, and someone is completely denying it. But it can get a little muddy where it's like it might look like it was, but again, AI has been trained on real things, so it's not always that. And I do think, you know, to err on the side of caution, I generally give people the benefit of the doubt. For the most part, innocent until proven guilty is just my mindset with those things.
Yes.
Now, if I go in and I see like, no, this was very likely generated by AI, or, you know, if I personally feel that way, maybe I'll drop it, but I'm not going to go and publicly accuse without actual proof. that's just not what I like to do.
I think public shaming should be brought back to a certain extent. Like, I do think, you know, being in school and being alive in the early 2000s did hone me to a certain degree of, like, some bullying is acceptable. Like, if you screw up and you're a mean person, then I think you can get away with getting a little bit of, like, heat for that, right?
Yeah.
Not pro-bullying, but, like,
yeah.
You know, public shaming was a bit of a thing. It's like, did the teacher sleep with a student? Shame. Shame. Did someone do something horrible to another student? Shame. Like, shame that person. I think it can be, like, a useful tool that whatever. And that coincides with, like, cancel culture, and I have mixed feelings on cancel culture. But in general, if an author, like the one recently that got caught, I'm like, I think that's when, like, a slight bit of public shaming. Do we need to dox the person? Totally. Do we need to run them off the internet completely? No. Mm-hmm. But I think shame for me is a pseudonym for accountability. You know, like, hey, we're going to judge you for this. You shouldn't have done this. Is not good for our community. Is the person going to fix it and apologize and move forward doing better work? Great. If they're not, okay. Well, then you, in my opinion, deserve a little flack. For a little flack. Again, people shouldn't be showing up outside of people's houses. People shouldn't be going to their places of work or emailing the place at whatever. Like, I think that's so far beyond that's worse, in my opinion, sometimes than what some people do. But yeah, it's like when TikTok was about to go down earlier this year, and all the big creators were suddenly like, "Hey, I actually faked all of this stuff," and people still follow them. I'm like, you know, in the same like I to me, I'm like, okay, well then you're okay with the lies. Yeah. I'm not going to follow people when I find out that they've done something wrong. So I think that's what our community should do. Just like unfollow, don't agree, call them out appropriately. Mm-hmm. And then if they choose to do better in the future, you get to earn that back.
Mm-hmm.
Most people probably don't agree with me on that, but yeah.
I actually fully agree on the, I've said that before and it's always come off as like really abrasive or like, I feel like insensitive, but I like what you said where it's like shame is kind of a, you know, accountability. It's really a, it's not about actually bullying people. It's being accountable for your actions and some actions come with consequences. And yeah, also just as someone who grew up a little later than you, but in Xbox 360 lobbies, I grew very thick skin as a child. So I'm used to, I think I have a similar mindset, although maybe stems from a slightly different place when it comes to that.
Oh no, I have a sister and she's not allowed in the gaming chats for that reason, which I think is good. I'm like, you know, that's fine. But at school, she's being, some girls are mean to her and she has to deal with it. I'm like, great, builds character. You learn how to handle conflict.
Right.
I think so many people are so like, that, you know, I'm like, I don't know. If you do something wrong, there's a consequence to that.
Yeah,
not forever and always. Not forever and always. That's the thing that I'm like, people can redeem themselves. They can do not great things.
Yeah.
But if they grow from it and they get better at it and they apologize and then they, that's it. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, we've all done that. I've made horrible mistakes. I said horrible things back in the day.
I think that's just part of being a human person. So,
human person, not AI. Human person.
Yes. That's another, I think that's another thing that we bring into our art, though, right? Is our growth and our flaws and all of those things that AI just doesn't understand and can't understand. It can mimic an understanding of it to try and put out something that it thinks you're going to like, but it can't truly understand what goes into that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about AI in the editing process. I know we touched a little bit on assistive tools like Grammarly and things like that, but I want to talk both the generative and assistive when it comes to editing, because some people will say something along the lines of, well, I don't use ChatGPT to write my book, but I put my work in there to edit it, or something along those lines, right? So the lines get very blurred with like what limits people set themselves for their AI usage. So I was kind of curious how you feel about AI being used in the editing process, whether it's generative or assistive, like we said.
Yeah, I think we touched enough on the assisted bit. I don't mind. I use like I said, Grammarly in mine, as long as it's like, and some people can probably they might. I mean, I'm probably gonna get clipped for saying I'm a bully or whatever, but you know, I might be a hypocrite by using Grammarly even with the AI assisted off. That's okay. I'll take that heat. But I don't know. I think running it through a Gen AI program like ChatGPT to edit is, we know that it's been trained on like non-approved stuff. We're only talking about ChatGPT a lot here. I am not familiar with a lot of the other OpenAI source. So base stuff. I know, what is it? DeepSeek just came out and like kind of wiped the floor with OpenAI. But yeah, like in general, if your AI, Gen AI tools are being taught off of pirated material, I don't think you should be putting your book through an editor that's like a Gen AI editor. I just don't, only because it's being taught off of all of these authors that have put in all this hard work. And again, if it's for quickness factor, that's somehow worse in my mind. You know, I'm just kind of like, if it's for quickness editor, there are people who will do like quick edits for you. Like mm-hmm. you pay them $200, whatever the amount is. So I don't know. I'm not a fan of that. I think there is like a human element, right? When it comes to editing, it's like there are so many books on my shelves that I'm like, this should have gone through another editor, or yeah. some they should have hired a different editor, right? And it's like the story would have been good if maybe they just had like under a different name, whatever. And so mm-hmm. I'm like, even that's a part of the human process, right? Like, oh, I'll give this author another chance, even though I didn't really like this, should have gone through another round of edits. Fourth yeah. thing. But yeah, I just don't. Because when you edit something, you're asking usually the person to give feedback, to go really deep and explain why, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have experience putting anything through a Gen AI program to edit anything, so I don't know if this is the thing. Yeah. But I feel like there's a disconnect probably of like, but why is this an edit I should choose? And maybe it's just like a very basic American grammar versus English grammar mm-hmm. component, if this makes sense. So I don't know. There's just like so many caveats of like why. I want to be able to ask somebody why and get yeah. a thorough explanation and be like, well, some authors use this for this reason and some use this for this. I'm like, okay, that's great. I don't want a robot to tell me how to do that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. I don't really have a lot to add to that or to what I've said about
it. I'm obviously very passionate.
Yeah, well, just I feel like I've already explained my thoughts on generative AI, and they don't really change whether you're putting it through just to write your first draft or to edit. I feel like at that point, it doesn't really make a difference to me. It's the same thing. Because, like you said, it's removing the human element from the art, and the act of editing is refining your usually very messy first draft into like a shareable piece of literature that you can share with other people. And there's a very, you know, that's a very important process of creating a book. And so to say, well, I only use it for editing. Okay. Well, that's for some people, that's most of the book. Like their first draft is just, you know, very messy, and they find the, like the true soul mm-hmm. of their work in the revision. So
right.
if that's you, then you're telling me you find 75% of your final book through AI edits. Like I don't think it's any different than having it write the entire book for you at that point.
Yeah. It's like, to me, it's like, participating, which I like to do, in like a good debate, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it's just casually sitting across the table at dinner with somebody that disagrees with you, it's a debate will either solidify your beliefs or bring in new ideas that make you question and doubt your beliefs enough to go, hey, actually, I haven't thought about it like that. Let me think about it. And you might have changed my mind here, right? So mm-hmm. I think with Gen AI.
We've shortened it even more.
Jai. there's none of that really, right? You're asking it to do something for you, but I don't think it's the challenge that people think it is. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, the quickness and ease and ability that it can do it in however many seconds for you. Yeah. And you're like, I don't know. I just, I think it's lazy.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great way to sum up like just any Gen AI usage is it's usually laziness that it boils down to. Mm-hmm. Well, we can kind of gloss over this one a little bit, but I know I touched on how we feel like picking up work and seeing that AI disclosure and then kind of losing all interest in it. So mm-hmm. I think we're both on the same page with that. So, I'll kind of look at it from a different lens where do you think that the broader reading audience and people who are going into bookstores or buying books on their Kindle and things like that, how do you think they feel? Cause I know in our online bookish spaces, there's a pretty strong consensus against it, but have you encountered anyone who's maybe not active in these online spaces and is less opposed to it or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My dad is, I think at least from the brief conversations we've had about it, is less opposed to it. And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think for him, when he found out that that Meta was training off of pirated material, mm-hmm. he was like, well, okay, that's not right. I was like, okay. But he's like, but if you put your work out there, specifically with like art, on Instagram or something like that, you know, he's like, well, it's like if you go out and put an expensive piece of art on the street in the middle of downtown and expect it to not get stolen. And I thought that wasn't the best analogy, but I do understand his point of like, if you put something out into the world, there is a potential and a high one at that, especially in our digital world, that it's going to get stolen or it's going to get used in a way that you don't agree with. So anyway, I have met people or, you know, a few that are just kind of like, I don't think it's as serious as people are making it out to be. Mm-hmm. And I think when we start talking about Gen AI, they're thinking about all the benefits of it in the, some of the situations we've already mentioned. So I think for us in our like little bubble here, we're very much against it. But I think to the average layman who's not in these like creative spaces, to them, it's like, oh, a benefit because our traffic systems are getting better and people can ask really hard questions and get in it, whatever. So, yeah, I personally think that readers like just aren't going to they're not going to let it fly. That's the one crazy thing about like fan fiction is that if you talk to people who read and or write fan fiction, I mean, all of it is always just so impressed with the author doing something in their free time for no money, only for the love of the thing and doing it. And they're always like, does anyone have recommendations? That's also another point is that like people will reach out to their own community and be like, I just finished this one book and or fan fiction or piece of literature. Does anyone know of anything that's really similar? Mm-hmm. And that in of itself just like breeds, you know, someone might see that and go, they want something that's really similar. I have an idea that's similar, so I'm going to write that thing.
Yeah,
I think it's
totally
very similar to why you and I write is because we're like, oh, I think we'll fill like a small niche that we don't really see a lot of. So anyway, I'm blabbing again, but I don't think readers are going to ever be for it. Anyone who is a fan of it tends to be like in the tech space themselves and are like, look at the capabilities. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
I've definitely met people who do like read books or consume different types of entertainment who generally seem to be of the mindset that when it gets to a point that they wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a Gen AI work and a human created work, as this is kind of going off of their own explanation, that they wouldn't care. And that's generally where I've seen people go with it. Who are kind of outside of, like I said, our online bubble and things like that. But I do think subconsciously, like at least right now, they very much don't want to read AI works where it's, you know, if you pick it up, it's just not going to be of the same level of quality. But I think they're just less vocal and they're less in this space of, you know, being against it, that it's, they don't really realize what it all entails. So they're, they're less opposed to it currently based on that, those factors. But I think with like the right information and things like that, they'd be a little more cautious about like picking up an AI created work. But I do think sometimes in our online spaces, we can kind of create echo chambers where we think everyone agrees and everyone is against this. And that's not always the case because there's, there are plenty of people who, like you said, especially in like those spaces who are very much for it and want to see it, you know, revolutionize in some way, you know, in their words, creative industries, which I obviously disagree with, but those people do exist and you can't pretend that it's 100% people who agree with our take. All right. Well, I have a few more different usage scenarios for generative AI. Some that I think are kind of prevalent on social media more so than like actually writing with Gen AI. Because I think, like we've said, most writers, not all, but most writers seem to be against using Gen AI to create their works. Now, when it comes to creating covers or promo materials, I've seen a lot of both of these where authors might say their work is not written with AI, but then they do have an AI cover either obviously, or it's just disclosed that it's an AI cover. And then same mm-hmm. usually extends in those cases to their promo materials like ads, images, social media mm-hmm. posts. So I'm going to just kind of lump those two together. But how do you feel okay. about like an image generator being used to generate your book cover or to generate an ad image or something like that?
Yeah. So I actually changed my mind on this pretty recently. I think last year there was an episode where I said like, and I went through the vein of affordability. Like if someone who's working like two jobs and has a family and is just trying to promote their non-AI written work yeah. and they truly have edited it and can't like really afford to make a book cover or promo materials, that I'm like, I understand. I don't agree with it, but I understand why you would go that route. I think I've changed my mind that I, you know, and honestly, Beck's kind of changed my mind too. She was like, I taught myself how to do this. That gets into the, does someone have the time to if they're working all these jobs and have children or whatever? And so I do understand that. I think there are some caveats, but at the same time, I do think there are so many good free resources out there that at this time, I don't think it's worth it, slash I don't think you need to. Is it, I don't know, I'm interested to hear your thoughts. It's, I guess I'm not really necessarily talking about hire somebody, in my opinion, even on Canva for $15, and it might not be the best thing ever, but, you know, there's that route. There's finding someone on Instagram who's doing free book stuff, right? Like, you know, just buy me a coffee and then whatever, I'll do my best. Or I don't know. I do feel like there are so many other avenues that you can go that if you really have exhausted all options, you've scoured the internet, you've done, I mean, there are so many free photo sites and graphic sites out there that it just seems, will it take a learning curve? Will it mean that you're pushed back for your publication date a couple months because you're teaching yourself Canva or even just like working on PowerPoint or something? Yeah, maybe. I think, again, it just goes back to that instant gratification component of like, okay, it might take you a while to learn how to do this. That's a part of the process. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think promo materials or like writing captions for promo materials or any of that, I just like don't think it's necessary. I wish people had time. I wish people had and felt like they could take the time to learn things. We don't live in a world that really fosters learning or slowness.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just don't, I have changed my mind. I really don't think it's appropriate in any type of creative. Yeah. Even like I draw sometimes. I'm like, I'll just go on Pinterest and find like a reference image. You can go to Google for a reference image. Yeah. That's how I fit that in.
Yeah. I also just don't like seeing it on a book cover or in a, like an ad image. Just not a fan. And usually it makes me question, even if you say the book wasn't written with AI, it just subconsciously makes me, but is it, you know, and I think like you said, it's not, you either use AI or you spend $700 on a cover designer. Like there are plenty of options in between. There is plenty of sites that offer covers from $10. They can be pre-mades. They can be customs.
Yeah.
There is Canva, which is like what, $15 a month now where you can make your own cover. You could learn Photoshop and make a maybe a little more detailed cover. You can go to a stock image website. There's free ones out there and use that to kind of enhance your cover. But I don't think using AI does anything except provide that instant gratification that we've touched on. And I think some of it, at the risk of putting a controversial opinion out there, I think some of it comes from, this whole episode is probably going to be, somewhat controversial, but, I think some of it comes from like a sense of entitlement where it's like, I want the $700 cover look, but I don't either. I either can't afford it or I don't want to pay for it. And to that, my response is you can still make a book cover. Like, you're not entitled to the same level of quality. If it, like, that's a skill that as a society we've kind of decided is worth this much, because that's pretty much a standard price across the board for like really high end cover designs. So if you can't afford that skill based on like the market price for it, then you don't have a right to the same output, is my opinion. Just as someone who works in creative field for my day job as well, like with web design, you're not entitled to a great website design if you can't pay for it, is kind of where I go with that too. And it's like, you know, it at the end of the day, it takes someone's labor and it takes work and expertise and things like that. So I do think there is a slight sense of entitlement when it comes to like thinking that you should have the right to have all of these like really extravagant artworks, whether it's for promo materials or your cover, but not wanting to accept the cost that comes with that. Or like we've said, the learning time and like the learning curve that comes with being able to create your own. Because that is, as you've mentioned, a great example, Bex, who is, you know, very adamant about not using AI, despite, you know, being very vocal about not being able to afford those things. So rather than go into an image generator, she has learned Canva and makes her own covers. She does a lot of self-editing. So I think for me, there's not really a good justification for using it in those scenarios. And I think, like you, I was kind of initially of that mindset where I was like, well, if you can't afford it and you know, you don't really have any other options, it's fine. But I think after learning about all of the options that are there.
Yeah, agreed.
It's like, well, there really are like thousands of options for you to choose from. This one should be like the last resort. And there's no reason that the 999 other options before that wouldn't work.
I'm glad we're on the same page. And yeah, it's like one of those examples of you can't change your mind. But you know, I have like a Pinterest board where I go on to, I can't remember the exact website, but it's like open source art that has finally reached its like, you know, it can now be open source so you can use it in whatever you want. And it's free. And all you do is just go, and it has like different historical time periods, and you can, you know, search by weird cat or whatever. And then it even gives you like a little history blurb next to it. It's like those resources are there. You just have to want to do that work. And like you said, I think there's like an entitlement and like a laziness component of for some people, not all. And again, I'm just one person and so are you with our opinions out there. But it's like, if you really care about the craft, if you really care about it, then you're going to do the work.
Right.
To get it out there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's true for this, for the editing process, for the writing process. It's really true for like any aspect where people might try to justify its use, is if you actually cared about the quality that you were putting out and the process of creating this art form, you'd put in the work and the time if you didn't have the money for some of these things.
Yeah, agreed. And it sucks sometimes because I'll be on like Instagram and when those the trend came out with like the medieval trend where they're like choose your whatever, like some of the art I was like, that's so cool, and then you find out it's all AI generated and you're like, god dang it,
some of admittedly, it's so sick. Admittedly, there are some times where I see something that's AI generated and I'm like, that looks very much like what I want to use, but I out of principle I can't use it. Not saying it doesn't output some nice results sometimes, but knowing what it's trained on and everything like that, it's just,
it's like ethically you can't. Yeah, for sure. I'm like, I can save this so that when I hire someone to do something, I can be like, look, can you make this as close to that as possible? Like, sure. I think that's fine. Inspo, that's one of those weird ones. I'm like, sometimes on like my Pinterest board, be like, oh, that's awesome. And then I'll go and save it. And then I'll click on it and it's just like nothing but AI images underneath. I'm like, oh fuck, this is an AI image. Yeah. I'm like, but it is a really like, I like it and it's on my Pinterest board. Do I save it? Do I not? So if I can avoid it, I clean up my Pinterest boards, but sometimes they slip through. Also, especially like with the like fantasy scenes that kind of look like a lot of artists that work on video games will also just like do background art. Mm-hmm. And I follow a couple on Instagram and they're phenomenal. And then yeah. some of their stuff will show up on my Pinterest and I'm like, oh yeah, like that's really cool. But yeah. that's when it gets hard to determine whether or not something is AI or attributed to an actual artist. And then I go right. on reverse image search and like see if I can find the source.
Yeah.
It's this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be difficult, especially when you find one that looks like perfect. What you're looking for. And then,
yeah.
All right. Well, I have one last use case yes, for Gen AI before we get into yeah. our hot topic. So
I think I know what our.
Yeah, I think you do because it did not. You know where it came from. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So Gen AI as like a brainstorming partner. I think this is going to go back to the critical thinking skills a little bit. Mm. But, you know, some people will say, you know, as a devil's advocate, usage for AI could be it can give you writing prompts, or if you're stuck in like a narrative bind, you know, having some writer's block or struggling to solve a plot problem, it could be useful in helping you in that regard. So how do you feel about using I know we said ChatGPT a lot, so I'm not going to say specifically ChatGPT, but Gen AI in this regard. So not outputting prose, but maybe like a partner to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, I think the prompts is an interesting one. Like, if you're like, hey, I'm stuck and I want to work in my world, you know, can you give me prompts in this regard? I don't know. I know there are, like, prompt websites, but a lot of them aren't as niche. So I think, you know, as long as you don't use any of the writing that you take from this prompt, in my opinion, I'm like, if you – that's the thing is, like – oh, it gave me this prompt, but actually that would be a really amazing scene to input into my book. I'm like, well, that generated the idea for you. So yeah. If you're using it as a tool for writing exercises, I don't know. That's actually one I don't really know about. But when it comes to like bouncing ideas, like here's this idea I have, would it fit in this? I don't agree with that. I think that is... Go on Discord, find a writing group, find a writing buddy. That's what I did. Yeah. That's what I have. Shout out to Kate. You know, like we meet every other Sunday on FaceTime and we talk about writing and books. So it's like, I don't know. They're out there. You just have to want to spend the time with that person or that group of people. There's so many different groups. So I mean, I kind of have the same feeling about everything else.
Yeah, no, totally. I think... You know, I was struggling with where I was on this one a little bit because I feel like on the one hand, I want to say if it can help you practice writing by giving you prompts, great. But I also want to say, but that's, you know, George R. R. Martin, I kind of disagree a little bit with his take on fan fiction to some degree where he says it gives you like he recommends against using fan fiction to practice for writing novels, and this is just his opinion where he says he thinks by writing in someone else's world you aren't exercising the muscles as a writer that you need to with like world building in your prose and things like that, which I think whether you agree with it or not is a great point that can extend here to where like yeah it can be good in the short term I suppose to help you with that skill, but you're not really exercising it to the extent that you need to be. Like if you're having it solve narrative problems for you, that's something you're supposed to be able to work through as a writer. And some of your greatest work can come from sitting on those moments and stewing on them and thinking through it and taking the time to solve them. Mm-hmm. So if you just put it into AI, I don't think you're really realizing your full potential. I think you're kind of taking the shortcut and
you're shortchanging yourself.
Yeah. I think, while it might be tempting and I don't think it's, you know, the worst usage out of the ones we've went through, I still don't think you should do it. I think as a writer, you really want to make sure you maintain those, you know, those skills and the ability to think critically and problem solve creatively. And I think that's a dangerous slippery slope to get on by having AI fix like your plot holes or, you know, tell you what to write, but not write it for you and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think there's so many other options.
Yeah, totally.
Like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Just don't do that. Just don't at all, period.
Just don't use
Gen AI.
That's a good like tagline for our thoughts on Gen AI. Just don't do that.
Just don't.
Yeah.
Gen AI question mark? Just don't.
Yeah.
Just don't.
All right. Well, I tried to word this hot topic best as I could from, yeah, I was going to throw it to you because it did come from someone in your circle. So I'll let you read us the hot topic for the week, whether or not it aligns with my kind of memory in the doc. That's totally fine.
All right. So our hot topic, it's our new little tiny segment that we're going to just play around with for a while or until we run out of hot topics, is kind of creating discussing opinions that people have that are kind of controversial. Last week's was, do audiobooks count as reading? So this week's is, okay, maybe I should give some background. I just giggle because I spent so many hours talking to my dad about this.
Yeah.
This comes from my dad. He is of the belief that unless you handwrite your entire novel, if you don't do that, if you type your novel on a keyboard, on a typewriter, then you cannot call yourself a writer. He takes the definition of writing as like the handwriting component. Like there is a definition of, there are many definitions of writing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them being kind of like pen to paper, handwriting symbols on something.
Yeah.
So what he has always done is he has handwritten everything. And then like he has like a writing class or did that he was part of, he would handwrite and then he would type what he'd handwritten. He would edit by hand. And he still does. So he is of the belief that you can't be a writer if you don't handwrite everything. And I said, okay, well, like, what about J.R. Tolkien, right? One of his favorite, one of my favorites, like someone I admire and whatever. And his reply was, imagine how much better it would have been if he had handwritten everything. His reasoning behind this is that there's one study in particular. It mostly focused on studying and retaining information for like retention's brain study purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing this very good justice, but it says that your brain works differently when you're handwriting. It slows the process down. You're creating more synapses and connections in your head. And that you will be more creative and your work will be more overarchingly better if you handwrite. I disagree, obviously. I do a mix of both. I handwrite and then I type. I like to type and then print out and then hard edit with like pen and ink.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the outlining process, I think typing is, I can get my thoughts out faster, which to him, he thinks that's a decline in quality. Yeah. There are many definitions for writing. So I think mine is the umbrella term that can encompass all of them, which includes typing. So he thinks that the appropriate word for people who have typed their novels and produce something should just be authors. I have authored. I am an author. That also is kind of controversial because author, some like one definition means you've like published it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't ever published anything, can you call yourself an author? So that is... that is the dad ultimate question of the day.
Yeah, thoughts? That's yeah, I guess I have a lot of thoughts, but I do like that you gave like actual context as to why, like what his reasoning is behind it, because I do mm-hmm. think that some of that is like valid, you know,
yeah.
especially the parts that cite the studies, like there's definite truth to when you're handwriting, you do mm-hmm. slow things down, you do process it better mm-hmm. and things like that. Like that's kind of not debatable, I feel like.
Yeah, agreed.
I think I just disagree on like the definition of writer, but also the fact that he includes like people who type their manuscript under the author umbrella is interesting, because mm-hmm. I thought when we initially like kind of touched on this topic, he was excluding them from that as well. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I think almost just... I guess I do disagree, but I don't necessarily disagree with why, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like I understand
for sure.
his, I think I just have a different definition. Like when it comes to writer, I tend to think of it more in like the umbrella term, like you said,
mm-hmm.
This actually is making me think, though, that I should handwrite certain parts of my manuscript.
Yeah.
Because that's something I've never done. I've just never handwritten a story before. So I think, I'm just so used to typing on the computer that it just, that's what I do for work. So it's, it just kind of comes naturally. I do think it is kind of opening me up to the idea of handwriting certain scenes and stuff like that, though. So I do appreciate the unique perspective for sure, because it's not, it is not one you hear very often.
It isn't, no. It's funny too. This is a very, there's a lot of debate, and he's thought this since I was a kid. It was one of our, topics at the table that we would debate over my whole life. It's always been a belief he has. And I think there is a component a bit that, I don't know, this is kind of conjecture, but it's a little bit of like, he has said that everyone can write a book now, and so the pool is watering down to an extent in terms of quality. I don't disagree with him, but I don't think that means that, like, if you write a book that you know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't connect the two. It does make it easier and quicker, but he's not wrong at all in terms of, like, that's why I do handwrite a good chunk of my stuff, and my poetry is all handwritten, and, it comes from a place, a different place, I think, that he and I disagree on a lot of stuff. So a lot of that kind of gets into, like, we're just butt heads, but he's not wrong, because there is a certain benefit to handwriting, and it does slow you down. And anytime I have a problem in my novel, I literally bust out my notebook. And I kind of go, where am I? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Here's the scene. So outlining, it's really helpful too. Would recommend, but I don't think you need to handwrite the whole thing to be a writer. And I don't think handwriting or typing, I don't think one makes you a better author than the other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's a hierarchy there. And I think there might be a little bit of that for him. Like, if you handwrote the whole thing, then that just, like, puts you above everybody else. And I'm not sure I believe that.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with that either, but I do understand, like, the, you know, the quality concern of writing a book is far more accessible now than, you know, maybe it was in the past. So that does naturally just, by definition, lower the quality standard that we're going to see. I just don't know that I think that the determining factor is handwriting versus writing for that, or like typing for that. But but no, I do think there are some, like, great points behind that perspective. And it, like I said, I really do appreciate, like, unique perspectives that I haven't heard before, because they make me think about things in a different light.
Now he's gonna be thrilled, and then he'll probably listen to this chunk and be like, you mischaracterized the fact. I can't wait. But no, he was really wanting us to discuss it and see what you thought. So and hopefully someone also takes a little bit of away, like, slow down. I think that's like a really good message. It's just like, slow down. There's no one on your butt about this except you, unless you have an editor who, or in like an agent who's like, your deadline is literally tomorrow. But there are benefits for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to try it, especially if I find myself, like, getting stuck or second guessing, like, word choice a lot, because it's easy to type when you're, like, you can just backspace, but when you're handwriting, it takes more time, and you can't just go and erase stuff. So,
totally, yeah, it is a tool that I do utilize a lot, and even, like, when you're not sure, it's the same way as with the prompt thing that we were just talking about with, like, AI, dude. Like, go, not you, dude, but, like, tip, people who are like, I'm using it for prompts. I'm like, go outside. Go outside and try to write about what you see and smell and hear and taste. And you'll find it's really hard. Mm-hmm. Like, it is such a challenge. And I think it's so fun to do, because you're like, whoa. Very rarely do we sit down and write about what we see.
Yeah.
Especially for us fantasy folks. Like, we're always in a different world. And then if you go to a coffee shop, like, describe the place around you. What's it smell like? And then if you find yourself using, like, very basic words, it's like, oh, hey, there's a part of my muscle that I need to start working on.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I remember.
Thanks, Dad.
I remember growing up, that was always, like, a writing exercise that was recommended to you, was just write about what's around you in the current room.
It's hard.
It really is a good exercise, because it is a lot harder than you think, like you said.
Yeah. I think another one that I utilize, I don't really utilize anymore, but this is something that you know, I should probably start to do again is write from an object's perspective, like your cup on your table. And if not that, like an object in the room of your characters, like write from their perspective, what they're watching your characters do and how they act. And you'll start to be like, oh, I don't think my character has any very like good, like unique ticks or like things that they do that makes them different or unique or whatever. And you're like, oh, and then it just, I don't know, reveals a lot about your own writing style. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, Ash, I think that's going to do it for our first part of the AI episode. Like I said, we have another dozen or so AI topics for the next time we circle back to this. But first, a fun little episode in between.
Yeah, this is good.
So, yeah, great, great discussion on AI. I think we have maybe one person in the chat over on TikTok. So I will, if anyone has any comments or questions, be sure to put those in the chat. If you have any topic suggestions as well, we'd love to hear those. But while we wait for those, Ash, do you have any closing thoughts for anybody this week?
I think that's it. I don't really have much. I'm excited for a little short episode to see how that goes. I'm kind of hoping there's some more drama with AI and writing between now and our second episode. So we have some things to gossip about. But no,
it's always fun. Yeah,
same old around here.
Yeah, I don't really have much to say either, other than our YouTube is still performing really well. I think our clip views have tripled from the first 28-day period to this this latest one. So super happy to see that. We've gotten a couple comments on YouTube, so I know we asked for some of those. Not a ton, just like one or two, like or two or three, but. We're slightly getting up there. So if anyone wants to leave a comment, let us know what you like about Quill Inquiry. If there's any aspects of Quill Inquiry you don't like, I would love to hear that as well. But just any type of feedback you want to give, we'd love to hear it. And also wanted to say thank you just for all the recent support over on YouTube as well. So
yeah, definitely. Thanks, everybody. Always appreciated.
Well, I think, I don't see any questions or comments in the chat, Ash. So I think that's going to do it for this week. We will see you all in our next mini episode on the 24th. But until then, everyone take care. And thanks so much, Ash, for the great discussion on AI.
Absolutely. See you guys next time. Bye.
Bye, guys.